morning.
Hey.
Good morning.
Morning, good morning.
Hey.
Hey. Abe.
Joe.
Hey, Abe, Joe. Abe Proctor, Joe Uris, KBOO, 90.7. Talk radio.
Talk radio.
Ooh, election time.
Yes, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're going to go both near and far today.
Oh, we are? Yeah, we are. Yeah. I'm going to go near.
Yeah, I'm going to go far.
Ooh, far out, dude.
And we'll meet you somewhere in the middle.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to talk about the local races, but it's very challenging because we are not by law allowed to talk about who we favor in these contests.
That's right. So you'll have to garner from our subtle clues.
Subtle clues.
Whom it is we favor.
Yeah, right. Like the initials. Can't even do that. No.
Nicknames.
Nicknames, you know. Old pudgy face, you know. No, can't talk about physical attributes.
Stinky.
Either. No, stinky. Oh. That's a physical attribute, isn't it?
No, you're right.
No. So ephemeral and unfocused. Yeah, you know, like that. So if you want to know what we think about the various local elections, you stay tuned, and there'll be clues in your radio.
Yeah.
So just reach your hand in there and grab that high voltage unit that they have in there. That'll give you a...
Then you'll understand
everything. You'll understand everything, right. You'll be really clear. So, anyway, this is Talk Radio. We do want to hear from you, but I have an important announcement.
Okay.
This is just me. Maybe Abe doesn't feel this way. I want new voices.
Oh, you always want new voices.
Yeah, so what I want to do is I want to ask people who ordinarily...
New voices, but not us.
Yeah, but not us. We want old us, new you. What we want is people to call us who have not had a chance to be on the air. And in order to make that happen, because we don't have like 7 lines, I want to ask those of you who normally are already on the phones calling us with your speed dialers and always get on and stuff to forbear. Step back.
Yeah, this isn't going to stop those people.
Yeah, it is. They will understand and they won't call.
No, they're going to call anyway.
No, they won't.
The best we can do is encourage those other people to actually try as well.
Okay, but, you know, I'm going to dump them.
Okay.
I'm going to be rude.
You're going to use your power?
I mean, well, power. What power?
Station. Privilege?
Privilege. I'm going to use my privilege. My white skin male Audi rather than any privilege.
There it is.
I'm going to do that.
All right, well, we'll see how that goes.
Boy, that was a little silencer there, wasn't it? What do you want to start with? You want to start with the really bad news, or you want to go to the local really bad news?
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I have in my hand the voter's pamphlet. And I want to talk about local
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, see, I haven't got one of those. I have a ballot.
What do you mean you haven't gotten one
I got
of those?
A ballot, but
I
didn't get a pamphlet.
One of those.
Somebody screwed up. Yeah.
Okay, we already had on our own show, we had Diane Lynn and Terrence Smith and Ted Wheeler. And that wasn't that a brouhaha?
Yeah, it was fun.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was good. Ted's got a lot of money.
Yes, he does.
He's favored by almost everybody. The bad news about Diane Lynn comes out all the time.
Yeah.
I can't say what I really think about that race.
No.
Okay. Let me just say there's too much money in politics. Okay. Can I get away with that? Maybe not. Maybe they'll throw me off the air. Well, that'd be cool. Okay. Then there's this city of Portland.
Right.
There's this enormous contest, as you know. Now, people don't realize this. There is this so-called
voter-owned elections.
Voter-owned elections, which I like.
I think it's brilliant.
I think it's a brilliant idea. The execution has something to be desired, but it's the first iteration. Mm-hmm. That's right. First iteration of that. And you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding on this. This goes to the voters after it's been demonstrated.
Right.
So people can actually accept it or reject it, and all the big money in town can then push against it.
You wouldn't know that from some of the anti-Eric Sten ads on the radio.
Have you noticed the attacks on Eric Sten on the radio? Vicious, nasty,
yeah, they say things
gross.
Like, you know, every time you hear, an Eric Sten commercial or you see an Eric Sten sign.
You're paying for it.
Yeah, well, you're paying for it, and you never got to vote for it.
And you're not paying for it.
Right. But it's precisely the point that tax dollars are paying for it. That's a good thing, and that's why they're trying it.
Well, and by the way, the Portland Alliance of Portland Business Alliance,
Alliance. Yeah.
Which is a merging of the don't let them sit, stand, or hang out on the sidewalk anywhere kids movement for downtown niceness, together with the we've got to have cars on the mall. crowd with the old Chamber of Commerce. They merged, you know.
Yeah, so they're opposing voter-owned elections.
Yeah, they tried to get it on the ballot. They couldn't get enough signatures or something.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you really think that opponents of voter-owned elections really have the taxpayers' best interest at heart, or are they simply trying to protect their ability to influence the outcome of elections?
Oh, gee, let me think this out. You mean, do I think that moneyed interests would rather be able to give all the money they want to the candidates they want to get them elected, or are they simply concerned for democracy in America?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Ah, gee, that's a hard one. I think all elections, from the national on up, should actually be voter-owned. I think the period of time during which you can campaign should be limited to 90 days on all elections. I think that the amount of money you can spend should be strictly limited. I think that the media, since it's a public service, should be required to give equal time to every candidate.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And the candidates can decide what crap they want to put on.
I agree with you.
That's what I think.
I would go so far as to say that positions held by organizations like the Portland Business Alliance, i.e. that they are standing up for the rights of ordinary taxpayers, it's nothing but a canard.
A canard?
A canard.
Isn't that a kind of a thing on an airplane or a duck?
Yes, but it's also a disingenuous statement.
Ah, it's also you mean like a lie?
Also, yeah, or a straw man.
Straw man.
Meaning an argument that is thrown up to distract attention from the actual issue.
Well, yeah, the whole thing makes me throw up, I'll tell you that. No, so the main players in position number two for the city commission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the way, people who want to do away with our city commission government also suffer from a misunderstanding. I like our system, actually.
Yeah, I do too.
Anyway, so it's unique. That's not unique. Relatively unique. It's funny to use the word unique these days.
Yeah, everybody modifies unique. What's up with
rare.
That?
Rare.
You
it's
see
rare.
People say, you hear them say very unique. That drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Very people unique. People don't modify
super unique.
The word unique. Unique means unique. You can't be very unique or a
now,
little bit
now,
unique.
Now, Abe, please.
All right.
If we wanted a politically correct grammarian,
not politically correct
grammarian.
We have this beautiful language. I'm just asking people to use it correctly.
Okay.
All right.
You all right?
I'm okay.
Can be okay.
Yep.
Have some more coffee. All right. The race there bears down to Ginny Burdick, who has a kind of a liberal reputation in the legislature, who works for what is it? Gerber and Bard?
Garden Gerber.
Garden Gerber.
Who, incidentally, would not... Remember during the whole PGE flap a year and a half or so ago?
Yeah.
We asked Brian Gard, the principal of Garden Gerber, the head of the advertising campaign against...
Well, no, the public relations campaign, not advertising.
He opposed making PGE a publicly owned entity.
Can you imagine that?
Right. He refused to come on this program.
Well, he said he wouldn't.
Well, that's a refusal.
Yes.
Okay, you're hedging. All right. So that's where.
Well,
Ginny,
I want to work for him someday. What can I tell you?
That's where Ginny Burdick works.
That's where she works. But we don't want to hold against her employer. I once worked for Meyer and Frank.
Yeah, but we've never asked Meyer and Frank to come on the show. We never asked Meyer or Frank.
Yeah.
Either one of them to come on the
show.
You
know, Frank and Meyer both existed when I worked there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a locally owned.
Huh.
But that's irrelevant now. And so, we would have Jenny Burdick and Eric Stan on the show, but we couldn't ask them because we would also have all the other candidates,
mm-hmm.
which is a kind of KABU rule, I guess. Is that really a KABU rule? We should have never asked and just done what we wanted. But anyway, so we can't have those two candidates on to slug it out. I like a naked mud wrestling. For a political campaign.
Yeah, it doesn't play on radio quite so well.
Oh, we could do color and play-by-play.
We could sell tickets.
We could sell tickets, make money. Anyway, so she, Ginny Burdick, who comes out of this big PR firm, which supported Portland General Electric, has been running this kind of attack campaign against Eric Sten. Well, I can't say she's running it. Her people are running it. Meanwhile, Eric is going with the voter-owned elections thing.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of that. Now, Eric did, let's be fair, Eric made a mistake. He didn't listen to me.
Right.
No, it's true. I ran into he's very accessible. I ran into him. You know, I said, don't go with the software on the Water Bureau. I said, you can never trust these software purveyors. These vendors always lie about what their software will do and how quickly it'll be up and running. And this is out of the experience I've had at various both public and private entities. It's true. And he said, oh, no. Well, guess what? The software that they provided for the Water Bureau was totally... So, and now he has to bear the shame of it. while people who generally don't pay much attention are angry about their water bills, because they are.
All right.
And I warned people years ago in the Oregonian, his all ego for Joe Day, I warned them in a big, big article about how it was gonna, the water bills had to go up because of the sewer issue. The combined sewer overflow issue.
Well, I sense a huge diversion in the show looming here.
Sewers?
No.
When the sewers hit the fan?
Yeah, I'm talking about how we could talk about the, you know, embarking on a big project necessarily requires more revenue, which might translate into higher water bills. But we don't want to go there.
No, we're not going to go there today. But they had to do that one. Now, that's that race. Then we have the City of Portland race for commissioner position number 3.
Oh, we forgot about Emily Boyles, though.
We forgot about it. No, we did not forget about Emily Boyles. We chose to ignore her.
That's an interesting story, though. And it bears directly on the voter-owned elections issue.
And David Lister, the wild card, if you really want to go into this.
See, I don't know anything about him.
Oh, I do.
I do know that Emily Boyles misused, apparently, the public money that she received to...
Well, that's the allegation.
That's the allegation.
Well,
she has been ordered to repay it.
And she's been disinvited to the debates.
Yes.
So... but essentially, there was this weird thing, actually. There was this guy, I can't remember his name. Do you remember his name?
A Ukrainian gentleman.
Yeah, a Slavic...
Right, hired to...
Slavic sucker.
To gather signatures to put Miss Boyles on the ballot.
Right, among other candidates. And he offered for X number of dollars, he could get Y number of signatures from the Slavic community.
Right, but he cheated.
Who is this guy?
He cheated, apparently.
Who is this guy? I mean, not his name, but who is he? You know, this guy shows up. You know, he just shows up. And he offers to make this deal. And then
it looks like he's well on his way to being a good American. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, it looks to me like he maybe has the inside track on organized. Anyway, there he is. And he did this, and he did it to her. And then she went and did everything wrong she could, sort of. Not everything.
Yeah.
But she hired a daughter who was a teenager.
Yeah. She rented a place long past the period of the election.
Right.
Yeah.
And she said that was the only place she could get because of the handicapped access.
Right. But she never detailed the nature of the handicap.
Or the access.
Right.
Well, anyway, so they want her to give the money back, but I think she's already spent it, so that's moot.
I think they're still going to want the money back. I don't know that's moot.
Well, anyway.
But anyway.
Anyway, so then in the other race, Commissioner number 3, there is Dan Saltzman, who has these incredibly beautiful ads on television. He's not staying with voter-owned elections.
Really?
I don't think so, because he has really big, beautiful, beautiful ads on television.
He's
praising his work for children, which, of course, city council has nothing to do with. But I think he was a county commissioner, so, hey, he did great work for children. And interestingly enough, his assistant is Jeff Kogan, who's running for a position on the county commission, which does have services for children. And Jeff is kind of like, it's almost like he's spin-off from Dan Saltzman's campaign, or vice versa. Anyway, so Saltzman has these big, beautiful, I haven't seen the radio, heard the radio ads, but the television ads are magnificent. And the only thing is that city council has... virtually, except for giving a little money to schools, as far as I know, very little to do with children.
Hmm.
You know, but it's irrelevant, but it doesn't matter because it's politics, as usual. And against him are a number of people who I know nothing about. And then there's a candidate who's considered his potential serious rival, a woman named Amanda Fritz.
No, I don't know much about her either.
Oh, I know a lot about her. I, in the interest of fair disclosure, I've met her.
Okay.
And she is a nurse up on the Hill, and she was on the Planning Commission. She's had some experience because she'd been on the Planning Commission. She actually is one of the voter-owned election people. She's using that system.
Oh, all right.
So she's sticking within that. And she was one of the early people on the Planning Commission to say, hey, this tram is a mistake.
A scam.
A tram scam, right. So she called the tram scam, and she is very much concerned. She also kind of rose to some prominence fighting against the shutting down of the waters, you know, the open
reservoirs
right. And things. So she is running as the outsider candidate against Dan Saltzman. And Saltzman, as like I say, has these ads about childcare and stuff. Which the city doesn't do. But, you know, he has lots of money, and she has a certain amount of money.
Right.
So they're the two candidates there. And I,
I think that in that particular race, it's an interesting test. It's very hard, you know, to knock out an incumbent.
In any race.
In any race. But this is the, so that's the, that race. And I really wish we could have had Saltzman and Fritz, just the two of them, on our show, because I think the contrast would have been interesting. But we didn't, and we can't. So we don't, won't. And that's, have I said enough about these races? Did I not give away my position on any of them?
I don't know who you're going to vote for.
You don't?
That answers your question.
Well, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. You can ask me who I'm going to vote for. That's not advocacy. Is it?
That's a fine line.
Is that, Joe, a fine line?
I don't think we want to rub that one out.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, let me just say, in one race I like the incumbent, and in the other I don't, and we don't have to say which race.
All right, that's fair.
That's fair. Okay, the Scappoose RFPD I have no opinions on. County Commission, I'm not going to go there. I will say that we're blessed in the one open county commission race, not the chair race. We have many good candidates in that race. So, and then there's one of those candidates is actually a radical, with a radical credential, radical history. So.
Oh my.
Yeah, yeah. He wants people to vote outside the box or outside the
Lions, Tigers, and Commies. Oh my.
Tigers and Commies. Oh my. Okay, so that's an interesting race, and we can't advocate. So I'm.
No.
But I have a hard time in that race because I personally know a bunch of the candidates.
Yeah, so we definitely can't advocate there, can we?
No, but we can say that one of the candidates, interestingly enough, his wife was, he and his wife both worked for the county at one point, and interestingly enough, there was a lot of shenanigans around trying to kind of place themselves well in that system. But we're not going any further than that on that. If people call and ask, I suppose I'd have to tell.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, don't ask, don't tell. 231-8187. But you have a lot of stuff that is of interest to
you. I do. Before we depart this issue, and I'm sure we'll come back to it, I would like to know what our listeners think about the whole voter-owned election system.
Well, I would like to know about...
I'm very curious about that.
I would like to know what they think about the voter-owned election system and how it could be made better. I think, obviously, one thing is to require that the signatures only be of registered voters in the area, in the appropriate area.
Of course.
Isn't that a requirement?
Well, no. That's just silly.
It was a little mistake, yes.
Yes. Okay. And it's not perfect.
Well, the idea is to get everybody.
Yeah, know, right.
Any 5-year-old, whatever.
So it's not perfect, but it accomplishes the crucial task, and that is to keep private money out of the...
Or to make private money less effective.
Less effective, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that it's an interesting project that needs a little tinkering with, but I like it. There's that. Now, I also want to know, if any of you out there who have a candidate you want to advocate for... We'll give you 30 seconds of advocacy.
All right, that sounds good.
If you're not a regular caller, because we don't want regular callers today.
No.
All right. And then I did want to talk a little bit about the Republican candidates for governor.
Oh.
Just because it's really the scuzziest race I've ever seen. It's who can be more than... Here's the thing, folks.
You like scuzzy races.
I do. I love dirty stuff. The fact of the matter is that the strategy of the Republicans, not of the Democrats, interestingly enough, is to pull to the right in the primary, and then pull to the center
in the general election.
It's always been the case, except for Bush, who turns out to be the right. But
whereas the Democrats during the primary wuss out, and then during the general election wuss out even more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's really fair to say. But the governor's race, I just love this. The governor's race for the Republicans have Patty Smith is running. How can this be? Oh, must be some other Patty Smith. I have this incredible. Tomorrow, I just handed this. Tomorrow at 7:30, the candidates for city council position 3 all have been invited. Saltzman, Fritz, Iverson, and Casper have confirmed.
Cool.
So Amanda Fritz and Saltzman will be on Barbara Bernstein's show.
Tomorrow morning at
7:30. Tomorrow morning at 7:30.
Well,
that should be a hell of a brouhaha. Brouhaha. And I want to talk about this governor's race, if I can just find it. Got to get past the... where is the governor's race? Governor. I don't see the governor's race. Help me.
Sorry, you're the owner with a pamphlet. I can't help you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, Congress, Governor's race. The Democrats have actually really gone after Kulongoski. Kulongoski, who has sort of been characterized as a do-nothing governor. I'm sure that's not fair.
Probably not.
Well, maybe it is. But anyway, against him is Pete Sorensen, who is I like him, personally, like him. And Jim Hill, who has a lot of money. He's got a lot of ads, a lot of union support. And I don't know where he's at on that. But, you know, he's a cool guy. And they're all cool, the three cool guys. Am I being totally cowardly there? Yes. Anyway, and then there's the, why don't I have the Republicans in my book? Oh, I know. Because I'm registered with the other party. They don't give me the Republicans.
It is a primary election.
So, but you have to help me now. The Republicans are...
Mannix?
Kevin Mannix, the ever-popular, ever-perennial candidate, always moving to the right candidate.
Right.
Always. Who's got the money of... What's his name, that weird guy?
Lauren Parks.
Lauren Parks, who has a sex educator.
Right. The secretive conservative money man.
Who no longer lives in Oregon, but gives a lot of money to Mannix all the time. And he does have it on his website, apparently. I haven't gone to it. He's a sex educator, a sex therapist.
Huh.
And he'll show you how to do it.
It,
yes. Right. So there's that connection, which is weird. And then Atkinson?
Yeah, he's in the state legislature, and he's from the southern part of the state.
Yeah, and the son of the famous sort of right-wing guy.
Huh.
And he has not made much of a showing in my consciousness. But then there's the other guy.
Well, we're in this kind of insular Portland/Willamette Valley consciousness.
Yeah, what do we know? It's downstate.
Yeah.
That counts.
Right.
And eastern
it's
Oregon.
It's in the other Oregon.
Yeah, and then there's this the other guy, the lawyer.
Him? I don't know.
Well, we got to remember his name, or this is gross.
Hey, if you're listening
No, it'll come to me. It'll come to me.
Oh God! If you're intimate knowledge of the Republicans,
No. It's it starts with an S. It's Saxon.
Saxon.
Right. And he is accused in the Mannix ads of being a Portland liberal. Oh man.
Running for the Republicans.
But he has these really amazing right-wing ads himself.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, like spewing the...
So Mannix is heading so hard, making a hard right cut towards fascist land,
yeah.
He's accusing Saxon of being a Portland liberal.
Who's already made a hard cut to fascist land. And Atkinson's already there, I think.
That should be really fun.
It should be really fun. The Republicans are really blessed with good, great candidates. And so apparently are the Democrats. Oy, gavolt. All right, yeah. Now.
231-8187.
But you wanted to talk.
Well, see, I've got another one of these complicated Washington scenarios.
Washington scenario! Yeah. We should have a Washington scenario.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a call. Into this.
231-8187. Hi, are you a new caller? George.
George, good morning.
Good morning, George.
George?
Mm-hmm.
You're on the air.
What's on your mind?
Pardon me?
What's on your mind, George?
Well, what's on my mind is you guys talk too much.
Well, it's a talk show.
And saying nothing and laughing at each other.
Ah.
And what I'd like to know, in the city of Portland, who runs the city of Portland? In other words, the economy. None of these candidates address any of this.
What do you mean they don't address any of it? Seriously, George, what are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is, what's the economy of, how do we get business in Portland?
We have business in Portland. We're one of the most successful cities in the United States. Haven't you heard?
Is it?
Yeah, it is. Actually, it is. You know, one of the great canards is...
As long as we can spend federal money on... We're doing great for, MACs and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it seems to me, what's the importance of the city council in doing anything?
I don't know if you're actually just being kind of hyperbole or what.
I'm really rather fed up with the same politics in Washington, the politics in Oregon, and the politics in Portland.
Well,
going to get it? Who knows?
Well, wait a minute. Slow down here. First of all, you don't dispute the fact that we have businesses in Portland. I mean, you agree that, for example, you go to the store and you buy stuff, right?
There are a lot of people here that are... apparently employed. And
apparently. I mean, they have money to buy stuff, so obviously the business hasn't disappeared. I mean, your argument isn't that there's that we're like in an economic depression here.
No, I guess, but we probably have business in Afghanistan if you want to look for it.
Well, if you call that business, yeah. But I'm not sure what your complaint is. Are you objecting to the fact?
No, my complaint is I could spout like I am the same way you spout. You get on the radio and you laugh and.
That's because they pay me so much, you know.
And you know how Saxon is a fascist and so on and so forth is a fascist. That's wonderful. And so I'm spouting the other way. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for the call. Oh,
okay.
I'm not sure what he meant, though.
I seem to be questioning whether the city government was necessary.
Well, I do away with the government, all of it. Yeah. Let the big corporations run it straight across. Would save them money.
Private security forces instead of police?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Sure.
That makes sense. I mean, it's so close to that on the national level anyway. Why have this middleman thing?
Yeah, I love it.
Save us time and energy.
Private corporation deliver our water?
Oh, yeah, just like...
We already have one delivering our power.
Just like they tried to do in Latin America.
Right.
Only they got tossed out there with
sure.
that. Yeah, they could do our water. They could do our public transportation, mm-hmm. like it used to be here when we didn't have... When we had Rosie, the bad bus system. That's before your time, but
yeah,
it was bad. But, you know, we could have that. And then only things that are profitable, you know, health care only for those who can afford it. Think of the population reduction you could quickly accomplish.
Yeah. Decrease the surplus population.
Privatization of prisons is big, very big, actually happening.
Yeah,
actually
all over the place.
All over the place. Yeah, so, you know, the guy's not far from wrong.
Yeah, he's ahead of the curve.
But I'm not sure he meant that, because I wasn't clear.
Now, mostly he said we talk too much.
Well, he's right about that. We talk too much.
We do. We sling the word fascist around, which we do.
We do. We sling the word fascist around because we see it dangling there.
Yeah.
Kind of like a dingleberry in our consciousness.
Dangling like a dingleberry. Nick, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
I was counting on you folks for one thing, and I'm going to push you for it in a minute. Before I ask you about that, though, I want to...
Do you think we talk too much?
No, well, you do that, but apparently people like that. One thing is, on the voter-owned elections,
yeah.
I think registered voters isn't necessary. I think that the point to reach out to non-registered voters and bring them in is a good one. I think that making sure you're reaching out to people of legal voting age might make a good distinction.
Well, that's interesting. See, I'm very reactionary on this. I actually think we should not encourage people to vote. I think the only people who really have a vested interest in understanding of the issue should bother to show up.
Well,
that's just dumb.
You think I'm dumb?
That's one thing.
He thinks I'm dumb.
In that corporate fascist direction that I think that you guys should leave till after the show. The thing I wanted to push you on a little bit, Joe,
sure.
was... I think that open commissioner spot in the county is something that we do have plenty of really good-looking candidates for, and I was hoping that you guys were going to help us to make some of the distinctions there because, you know, it looks like a really tight race, and I think that you owe it to us to tell us what you know and give us some tips on that.
Oh. Well, okay. I mean, Hansen is very experienced, seems a little tired, but, you know, let's see what happens here. Now I'm giving you kind of, you know, a good liberal. The issue on which he and I would disagree is he wants to he thinks it's rational to create a city-county government, which I am not in favor of, because I like the access that that the small-town kind of government we have has. Although, you know, that's an arguable point. What I'm trying to do here is give pros and cons for each of the candidates. Lou Fredericks is a very bright guy. I know him fairly well. He used to work as a newsie on Channel 8, and then he also was the PR guy for the public schools. And he was important. More important than that, however, he was a teacher in the Portland public school system at MLC, and a good teacher. I know that about him. He's African American, if that's of relevance. I'm not sure it is. He's a fine person. I would be comfortable with either of the two I've mentioned on the council at this point, on the commission rather. And the one thing that he and I might disagree on, which is irrelevant to this race, is that he feels that Derek Foxworth got a bad deal. But that was an informal conversation he had. Has nothing to do with the county commission. Okay, so now you're forcing me to kind of take it outside the box, as one candidate would say. Then there's Jeff Kogan. He's the prettiest candidate. Jeff has worked
came to Portland in the, what, the 80s, I believe. He has worked for the county as an exec for the county chair previous to Diane Lynn, has worked for Dan Saltzman and done excellent work on children's programs there. Jeff is says this is the only office he's ever going to run for, but I have a sense that he's a politically ambitious guy. He's, I would say, a conventional liberal. He is a competent person and actually is very persuasive, knows, therefore, not only how to, but is very good at working with diverse interests. So there's he. Then there's Xander Patterson, who is the only clear, I would say, left-wing choice in the contest. And Xander has a big picture orientation. I think he would be fine. He has some experience locally in politics. He served on the
Soil and
Water Conservation Board, which people don't know about, but it's important.
And active in the local Green Party.
Local Green guy. Now, have I
very unorthodox approach?
Yeah, but he's captured a lot of attention and a lot of excitement in the race. Have I left anybody out?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so. Have I left anyone out?
I think you've done a very complete job, and I'm actually kind of impressed with myself for getting you to talk serious.
Nice work.
Only 3 minutes on talk radio.
Nice job, Nick.
Yeah, you want to do this for me for a while?
Say it again?
You want to do this for me for a while?
No, I think you got your work cut out for you, but I think it's the right job.
All
thanks,
right.
Guys.
Thanks a lot, man. No, I'm glad he asked. I wasn't going to get into that because I know them all.
Very well. He put you on the spot and you delivered.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I know them all. I want to say this about that race. There is none of those candidates that if you voted for it, you would have been making a big mistake.
Well, that's good.
That's unusual.
Things working right.
And if you don't see it on your ballot, it's because it's districted. You know, it's districted, which that would be the one change I'd make, and maybe in city council. But it's districted, and therefore, if you're in I think it's north northeast is this particular race. And then of course there's the county chair race,
right.
Smith, who is a nice guy, and Lynn, who's been taking a lot of crap lately, and who I think is I like her personally as a person. I think she's a nice person, but she has suffered from foot and mouth disease politically. Right now they're after her. All of the establishment is after her, and then there's Wheeler, who comes out of money.
That's true.
And was a Republican until very recently.
Until very recently.
Right.
Diane Lynn is almost an iconic figure because of her action on gay marriage.
Yeah. And before that, she worked on keeping abortion legal in Oregon.
Yeah, that's true.
People forget these things.
You know, when she handed out those wedding licenses.
Wedding licenses, yes. Going to get married. Right. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm, thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. she violated some procedural... things. It was one of those it was one of those times when you may be doing the right thing, and you know, one of those times Thoreau talks about the necessity of doing the right thing even though it might not be
viable. On the other hand, she armed the right for a national campaign against rights for gays and lesbians.
That national campaign was going already.
Well,
there were ballot measures in several states.
You know, you're
before
right.
She took
you're right.
That action.
You're actually. I'm glad we had this conversation because you're right, I'm giving her a bad rap. But I didn't like the procedural. I didn't like leaving Lonnie Roberts.
No.
Out of the process. It was the gals.
No, she shoehorned
against
it,
the guy.
She shoehorned it through. There's no doubt that.
It would have been better to have hearings and discussions and stuff.
But,
heart in the right place.
Yeah, definitely heart in the right place.
Yeah.
She said, everybody's the same.
Brave.
Deserves to be treated the same, and
brave.
I'm going to do it because I can.
Brave.
And I have a certain respect for that.
I do, too.
Right.
But, you know, that doesn't mean that we're endorsing anyone.
No.
Wheeler has a lot of money.
Yes.
And he was the vice president of a financing outfit, a kind of rebanking kind of, I don't know, money pass-through kind of thing. I don't understand very much about that. And there's a town on the Oregon coast, I think, that's named after his family.
Right. Timber family.
Timber.
Yeah.
They're timber people. But he is he claims a lot of business expertise, and I don't know about that. I just don't know about that.
He was a smooth operator when he came on this program.
He is a very smooth operator, and he's lanky and lean. And he has a lot of money in his campaign. And Diane is being attacked, not left and right, but up and down.
Right.
So, I don't know.
KBOO, 90.7 FM, is the station you're hearing right now. 231-8187 is the number to call. I'm Abe, that's Joe. We're talking about local elections at the county and city levels here.
Yeah.
And
are we going to talk about the CIA guy?
Yeah, we are going to talk about the CIA guy. Let's take Richard's call.
Richard. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, guys.
Yeah.
I'd like to back up a little bit.
Now, remember, Richard, before I go any further, or you go any further, you can abdicate, we can't.
All right.
I don't know
I
if that's clear.
I have a question.
Sure.
Can I ask questions?
You can ask questions.
Ask away.
More fundamental issues or an issue.
Okay.
And you said something about local elections.
Yes.
Now, I want to point this out about local elections. There are each election that we're looking at voting in here is comprised of candidates that are all sworn to be U.S. citizens.
Is that right?
Yes.
I don't know that.
Well, in order to get on the ballot, that's a requirement.
Okay, I believe you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, in our in the federal constitution, which was put together by delegates from the states, is a particular authority for state citizens to vote. But in this, in Oregon, if you try to register as an Oregonian, you don't get on the registered.
I'm not sure I follow you there.
Well, they say that you have, even though it's state citizens that get to vote, they say you have to be a U.S. citizen and swear to that under penalty of perjury.
Ah.
My question is, how can we have truly local elections if everybody on the slate is a U.S. citizen and only U.S. citizens get to vote for those U.S. citizens that are running?
Well, I think that would boil down to, it would strictly be by the numbers. If there were enough people in this area who are non-U.S. citizens such that their vote, their participation in the election would affect the outcome, well, sure, but it may, you know.
No,
well,
I don't
I'm
think
asking why can't Oregonians sign up to vote for local offices filled by fellow Oregonians?
You mean why can't, you're saying why can't you register as an Oregonian? Why do you have to sign up as an American?
No, not an American, a U.S. citizen.
That's
and,
what I mean.
And here's what I am talking about that I haven't put in yet.
Okay.
If you look up electors, there's no quote V-O-T-E-R-S in the Oregon Revised Statute, but look up electors and see who they are. You'll find under Article 2, Section 2 of the Oregon Constitution that it is someone over the age of 18 resides in, not necessarily an inhabitant of, but resides in Oregon for at least 6 months and is a U.S. citizen.
Okay.
So then you go to the U.S., the definition, the only definition of United States in the Oregon Revised Statutes, and it doesn't talk about Oregon or any other independent state in the Union. So I'm wondering why you have to be a U.S. citizen when the Constitution protects the rights of state citizens to vote in elections.
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer.
Neither of us know the answer.
Well, okay, and I'm just suggesting
but
that...
But I don't think it's important.
Well, I don't think that these kinds of things are by accident. I don't believe in random occurrence in the events of, you know, the political life of the people.
So do you see a conspiracy here? I mean, what are you suggesting?
Well, I think that if we're not informed, we can't run a country in the manner that we're supposed to in a Republican form. I just think that without that fundamental information, not knowing what we're doing, we may be screwing up.
And well, I think we are. I mean, you know,
I just think we need to become, as a community, better informed about our unconscious moves. We just kind of move like cattle through the chutes, and, you know, we cast our votes for people we don't know who were. I mean, who would think that all these candidates are U.S. citizens?
Well,
and not state citizens.
Well, I think your point is, I think it's virtually irrelevant. I mean, the Constitution of Oregon, if I understand it, says you got to be an Oregonian in the most loose sense of the term, and you got to be a U.S. citizen, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, I don't.
It's not troubling me.
It's not troubling me either. If I had to guess, I'd say that you'd find similar requirements all across the country.
If I were to
you
guess,
you
got to
be a U.S. citizen. To vote,
I mean, come
period,
on.
In whatever election you're voting.
You don't really want some guy from Transylvania as your state governor.
Oh God, not the Transylvanians.
Oh, not the Transylvanians. Those blood-sucking Transylvanians. Ooh, stereotype. Okay.
All right. So
let's change the subject for a little bit. Now, other people, anytime. Now, we're looking for new callers, and the number to call is 231-8187, but we want to introduce some kind of national topics because they're so important.
And they're so titillating.
Excuse me?
I'll get to that in a minute.
All right.
Okay, this just in. There's some Republicans involved in a scandal in Washington.
A new Republican scandal? Oh, no, yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, apparently, and I'm going to try to lay this out. It's pretty complicated.
Oh, no.
There's a bunch of major scandals going on in Washington.
We talked too much already, and you're going to...
We've talked about them a whole bunch,
yeah.
And they all seem to overlap in some very interesting ways, and as do these new...
new scandals.
These new scandals, right.
How do they overlap?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with the ongoing investigation into the Randy Duke Cunningham corruption scandal.
Ah, now, California.
Right, Duke Cunningham, yeah. is the congressman from San Diego who has been indicted and convicted of bribery and corruption, among other things.
But he wept. He wept.
He wept. He did. he wept, but he still went to jail. I'm glad if they had kept him out of jail for weeping, I'd have been mad. So he's in jail, rightfully.
Right.
Because he's a sleazeball. And,
sissy sleazeball.
A sissy sleazeball.
Because he wept.
But apparently the corruption that in which Cunningham was involved spreads far and wide. It involves primarily a defense contractor,
yeah.
by the name of Brent Wilkes, who owned a MZM. MZM was, and Wilkes, were giving the money to Cunningham.
Yeah.
And we think it was money to other congresspeople.
Uh-huh.
And as it turns out, attempting to influence their behavior in various and sundry other ways.
That have nothing to do with construction.
That have nothing to do with construction, and maybe nothing to do with outright bribes. We don't know yet.
Uh-huh.
But apparently this involved provide space to have poker games.
Poker?
Yeah, now see, what's wrong with poker game?
Yeah, it's on TV.
Nothing. You play poker, you lose a little money, you have a good time.
If I played poker, I'd lose a lot of money.
You smoke some cigars.
Whoa.
You smoke some cigars.
Yes.
You drink a little whiskey.
Yes.
You have a good time.
Yes.
Except it seems that Wilkes provided hookers, too.
Hookers?
Yeah.
You mean like prostitutes?
Yeah. You pay money and then you have sex with them.
You pay money and you have sex with them.
Right.
Oh, that's... okay.
Okay. So we know that Cunningham was at some of these poker parties.
Well,
that's
between him and his wife.
There have not been any charges filed yet.
And the prostitute.
Nor any indictments handed out. But it apparently has involved several more congresspeople.
Oh, you mean congresspeople had sexual relations with women other than their lawful spouses?
Yes.
For money?
For money. But it wasn't their money, see. Although I suppose it would probably be scandalous in the current political climate if it was their money. But it happened to have not been their money. It was Wilkes's money.
So Wilkes paid... For the hookers. For the horse. Let's get it out there.
Right.
Paid for the horse. Okay.
Boy, Eduardo's branching out on the sound effects every week.
Shocked. I'm shocked. Congresspeople having sex with whores? Oh, no. Not in America.
Okay. So we're going to set that aside for
all
just
right,
a moment.
Put that aside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Under mysterious circumstances that have yet to be entirely revealed, Porter Goss, the head of the CIA, resigned last week.
Right. Porter Goss resigned.
Porter Goss is a former Republican congressman.
Yes, he is.
He
very loyal to the Bush team.
Very loyal to the Bush team. He took over for George Tenet.
Tenet,
who, after being bullied by the Bush team in the lead-up to the Iraq War, alienated them by going to the Justice Department and saying a crime was committed when covert operator Valerie Plame's name was disclosed to the press by people in the White House.
What kind of loyalty is that?
You see how these things are overlapping? I'm trying to lay it out here. I hope I'm doing it.
You are.
Right.
So, except for the hookers. They haven't come in yet.
Tenet was a reed bending in the Bush administration's wind as far as the roll-up to the war in Iraq until he decided they went too far.
Uh-huh.
He realized, as a good intelligence man, or a bad one, that that disclosing the names of covert operatives was just beyond the pale and couldn't be allowed to happen. So he went to the Justice Department. And
yeah,
said,
you know, when rogues in the CIA do that, they make them persona non grata and they chase them to Cuba.
Right.
You know.
So Tenet went to the Justice Department and said, a crime has been committed here, and we need to investigate that.
Right.
And that investigation is going on. So far, it has led to the indictment of Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney's number one guy.
Yes.
And
you know, Dick Cheney shot a guy.
He did shoot a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and got away with it.
Yes.
But, and now it's looking, signs indicate that Karl Rove will probably be the next person indicted.
You think they're kind of distancing themselves from Rove, pushing him into the corner to run the campaigns? Ha-ha.
Oh, no. I think that, we'll get to that in a minute. That's an entirely different story.
Okay.
Rove's running the campaigns because he can win the campaigns.
Yes.
But it looks like he may be indicted. Okay. Right. So Tenet was asked to resign.
Yes.
Because of this act of disloyalty.
Well, he was asked to resign.
Yes. He was... replaced by Porter Goss,
yes,
who was sent in basically to clean house at Langley To get rid of dissenting voices within the bureau.
Yeah, and almost everybody quit. I mean, people quit right. left and right.
One of whom, a former agent, asked Rumsfeld in public last week why he lied.
Yeah, did you see that in the news conference?
Yeah, phenomenal.
Yeah, but Rumsfeld, you know,
yeah, and then he threw Rumsfeld's own words back into his face. He said, why'd you lie about the weapons of mass destruction?
Yeah.
Rumsfeld basically said, oh, I didn't lie. And then the guy said, well, yeah, you said we know where they are. They're in Tikrit, in north and south and east and west, which incidentally was a comment I never quite understood. He said, we know where they are. They're around Tikrit in every direction. North, south, east, and west.
The big circle of weapons of mass destruction.
Yes. There's a ring. You can't miss it. Just head out from Tikrit. You'll hit something.
We missed them.
Right.
Okay.
So Goss took over for Tenet.
Yes.
Cleaning house at Langley.
Yes.
All of a sudden, he's asked to resign.
Yes.
We don't quite know why, but we think it's because his number two guy, a guy by the name of Dusty Fogo, was at these hooker parties.
Oh, my God.
Put on.
Are you serious?
Yes, yes. And there is some reason to believe that Goss himself, before he was head of the CIA, was at these parties, too.
Because he was a congressman.
Right.
And they go with hookers.
Right.
I see.
He's admitted to being at the poker parties, but says he never saw the hookers.
You know, poker is kind of an ugly euphemism for sexual relations.
No, it's just a card game.
Okay.
He said he was at the parties,
yes.
But never had anything to do with the hookers, which sounds suspiciously like Bill Clinton saying, well, you know, I was there in the circle when the pipe was being passed, but I didn't inhale.
Right.
So Goss may or may not have partaken of the earthly delights. Apparently Fogo definitely did, and some other congresspeople yet to be named. So we really don't know if Goss's resignation has anything to do with this ongoing...
No, we don't. You're speculating.
...probe into prostitution.
You're speculating.
I am speculating, but that's all we know at this point. Because all Goss has said, this is a direct quote. He said his resignation from the CIA is, quote, just one of those mysteries.
Ha ha.
Now, when a director of the CIA says it's just one of those mysteries...
Get it?
Do you believe him? I don't believe him.
Well, I believe him. I mean, he wants it to remain mysterious.
Yeah,
I believe that.
He does.
Yeah.
So we really don't know how deep this hooker thing goes, if you'll pardon the turn of phrase.
Okay, but beyond the hooker thing, which I think is small potatoes, personally.
Right.
But beyond, I mean, it just speaks to the corruption of the
It does.
Whole thing, which is probably the most corrupt administration we've ever had anyway.
Probably.
So, but then now they want to bring in, see, here's, I look at this in a different way. I think that what the administration is doing right now is shoring up its front. And its middle and its back.
That's right.
By getting rid of anybody whose loyalty could ever be questioned, which means anybody who ever asks any fundamental questions about anything.
Right, exactly.
And they're bringing in this four-star Air Force general.
Hayden. Michael Hayden,
whose job it was to spy on everybody, which he says it wasn't.
Right.
But he was the head of the National Security Agency.
He was. And there's something, a much more fundamental shift going on
in
the intelligence community right now, because Hayden has indicated that he is willing, along with John Negroponte, the head of the new National Intelligence
Now, wasn't
Director.
Negroponte involved in the arms for hostage? I mean,
he was.
He was a scandal guy from the old Central America stuff.
Yeah.
And he was pardoned, wasn't he?
He was pardoned by Bush the Smarter. He was also involved in setting up the infamous death squads in Nicaragua and El Salvador.
So he's really a cool guy.
Yeah, he's really a very violent, very bad guy, in my opinion.
Well, but not personally violent.
Yeah, he's head of the new, he's the first director of national intelligence.
Right.
Which is a new position set up by the Bush administration because they believe in smaller government.
You mean this new bureaucracy that has various elements of various agencies of various departments of the government?
Yes.
Is supposed to coordinate intelligence and make us safer?
Right, attempt to bring all intelligence operations under one umbrella. So that it would be easier to manufacture intelligence to bring us to war.
Ah.
Right.
Makes sense to me.
So, this is all getting complicated, but hang with me for a second.
Okay.
It all ties together.
I'm willing to see you're talking too much.
Hayden.
Yeah.
And Negroponte.
Yes.
Have indicated that they're willing to give up, and this is huge, they're willing to give up the CIA's covert operations sector to the control of the Pentagon.
The Pentagon?
Yes. Yes.
No. See, in America, we really want separation of powers. We don't want the military running.
Yeah.
We don't want military intelligence, which is a real, what do you call it, when it's something's a contradiction of itself?
An oxymoron.
An oxymoron. It's a real oxymoron.
It is.
Besides which, yeah. We don't want our military having that kind of power, do we?
We don't.
No.
You know, we got a lot of hard-boiled lefties listening to the show and calling into the show, and a lot of them dispute the legitimacy of the CIA and doubt everything it's ever done, and they point to the fact that it's helped engineer coups to displace lawfully elected leaders.
Well, yeah. You know.
Yes, and all those things are true.
Yeah.
But I think anybody but the most hard-boiled lefty will concede that some sort of intelligence apparatus has to be in place in the modern world, that there's a certain necessity there.
I don't know.
That we need to learn about the movement of loose nuclear materials around the world, for example.
No.
Okay. So what's being proposed now is that the Department of Defense, under the guidance of Secretary Rumsfeld, will now administer the CIA's covert operations. And this is a frightening, frightening
possibility. Wait, you can put Rumsfeld?
Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld, the head of the Department of Defense,
who is already
the lying SOB,
yes, who's already set up his own intelligence apparatus within the Department of Defense.
Yes,
it's called the Office of Special Plans. It's still in place.
Oh, right, with the Darfur. No, not Darfur.
No, with Iraq. This was the group that he set up to bypass the CIA to bring to the White House intelligence that supported going to war in Iraq.
Yes, of course.
Right.
Right.
So now we're looking at all of the nation's covert operations activities, which may or may not be legitimate, depending on which activity it is, now being brought under Rumsfeld's jurisdiction.
Well, but he's been so right on so many things.
Yeah, he's been so right on so many things.
So and he's a Bush boy.
Yeah, he's a Bush boy. And this is how this all comes together.
Oh, my
gosh. Now Rumsfeld will be able to gather intelligence and execute operations on whatever he damn well pleases.
And this guy who's going to be head of the CIA, this four-star Air Force general, Hayden
is a toady.
Already has lied. He's a toady and already lied about whether they did domestic spying.
Right, exactly.
So he's already lied.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
Yeah, so the scandal involving Goss, involving Fogo, involving Wilkes, involving the hookers and the poker and Cunningham and who knows who else was used as a pretext to get rid of Goss, who was resisting transferring the power of the CIA's covert operations to Rumsfeld. He at least had that going for him. Now it looks like the intelligence establishment, as we know it, will be dismantled and brought further under the control of this cabal of neocons who are leading us rapidly to ruin.
Okay, now that the last part of that is really the most scary part of which is that not only are these guys fascists, I throw around the word fascist, yes I do, not only are they fascists who want to centralize power in the United States and spend us into the grave and so on, not only do they want to do all that, but beyond that, they are incompetent.
Oh, grossly incompetent.
I mean, it's sort of like what happened to the Nazis when they put their own people into operating the German bureaucracies, which was hastened, I'm glad to say, the demise of Nazi Germany.
Right, right.
So this is like that. Only the German people were not happy with the outcome of that war.
No,
you couldn't say that.
No, they were not happy with it.
Okay, so what you're really saying is, what you're really arguing is that this has on one side the kind of filthy, ordinary, most degenerate, only more so politics as usual, coupled with a conspiracy to centralize power in the hands of the Bushies forever.
Yeah, exactly. First, it's a further glimpse into just how far and wide corruption has spread under this one-party rule we have happening right now.
Yes.
Secondly, as you just mentioned, it concentrates power even more fully into the hands of what we can only call at this point the triumvirate of Rove, Rumsfeld, and Cheney, who are really running this country. And to have Rumsfeld this sort of reach and this sort of power, this is covert power. This is not uniformed troops involved in military actions, which is the normal purview of the Secretary of Defense. This is cloak and dagger stuff that would be entirely his. And, Rumsfeld's supposed to report to the president, and he nominally does. But I don't think there's anybody left in this country who thinks the president of the United States is actually running things right now.
Do you think he's drinking again?
I don't know. And it's irrelevant. He's he's a hood ornament.
Snorting cocaine?
Yeah. He's like somebody who sits on the float at the
park. See, I think he's a little more. See, I see it a little differently than you do. I don't disagree with the whole thing up to that point. But I think that Bush represents and is seriously involved with this kind of religious, the converted religious, discovering, coming to Jesus kind of crowd.
Right.
But their Jesus is mean and doesn't preach Christianity as the Bible has it. They were retributive,
yep.
Retributive God,
vengeful
God.
Jesus is pissed off.
Yeah, Jesus, the angry guy. So you know, I think that Bush really believes in that. So he doesn't mind if the world goes to hell in a handbasket because it's in the Book of Revelations as they interpret it.
No, yeah, exactly.
So there is there's even a danger beyond the danger of centralized power and foolish wars, which is they don't give a damn if the environment gets destroyed.
No, they don't.
They don't give a damn if the United States gets nuked. They don't care.
No. No, this is all about imperialist conquests, both overt and covert, and as we've talked about in the show, overseeing the transfer of political and economic power to the emerging transnational corporate elite.
Yeah, you know, actually on the 24th, I and a number of historians, whose names, of course, I don't remember, from Portland State and from Linfield College, are going to talk about the whole concept of Jacobinism. Remember, we had a show about that. And I argue that this is kind of right-wing Jacobinism that's going on right now. But we're going to talk about the French Revolution with its left-wing Jacobinism and the Leninist Revolution with its Jacobinism. And then we're going to talk about modern Jacobinism. That's going to be my part.
Mm-hmm.
On the 24th at 3 o'clock at Portland State, I don't remember where. But maybe I'll be able to remember to tell people about it before then, and they're welcome to come. And I have a couple of things I want to announce. There's a party to defend voter-owned elections and raise money for that cause on Saturday the 13th at 6 o'clock. It'll only last an hour and a half. It's at 4620 Southeast 40th, number 2. So people could go to that if they're interested in supporting voter-owned elections.
Cool.
And we'll leave this at the desk for people who want the address. And I am pleased to announce that we're going to have Josh McPhee, who is this incredible poster and printmaking and stencil and street art guy, who has a show opening at Portland State at the Food for Thought Student Gallery at Portland State in a Memorial Center in the basement. And he's really good, and he's going to be with us. The show ends Thursday the 11th at from 7 to 10, but he's going to be around, and he's going to be on our show about 8 o'clock on next week. And he'll talk about how to make stencils, and, you know, remember that's my big thing.
Right.
Printing on the sidewalk. Right. I think it's very important, and he's a cool guy, so we'll have him on.
And chances are, if you've walked around Portland and you've seen some of his stencils.
That's very possible. Any of a number of other people's stencils. Yep. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
231-8187. Give us a call. Weigh in on this intelligence thing. If you want to talk about local elections, you can. And let's go to Steve.
Hey, Abe.
Yes.
When you referred to death squads in Nicaragua, you were talking about the Contras, right? I mean, the Sandinista government didn't have any death squads, right?
No, as far as we know, it didn't. Right.
Okay. Right. We're talking about the Contra rebels that were supported by the Reagan administration.
Okay. And Joe, about Jacobinism in Lenin's Russia.
Yeah.
After the end of the Civil War, wasn't the control of the party kind of loosening up for a few years until Lenin died, actually?
Well, that's true. Stalin took over. That transition is one which historians have discussed, debated, and argued about. And we now have access to a lot of the, not all, but to a lot of the secret documents that we didn't know about. So there's a lot of new scholarship coming out about that.
Yeah, I guess in my opinion, it seemed like the trend was it was going toward a workable model under Lenin. You know, once the Civil War had ended, and it was just about 3 or 4 years until he died. But I think his Jacobinism was dependent upon the strife of the Civil War.
Well, let me be clear. This era and these transitions in what was then the Soviet Union are not something I know a lot about. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is an area outside my expertise. We'll learn more about that from this, I of course forgot, from Linfield, who is a scholar of that time.
I'd like to go to that. Anyways, what I want to bring up is I can't believe that the Willamette Week has endorsed a Libertarian for Metro Council.
It has?
Oh, yeah, Tom Cox, Council District Number 4.
Oh. You know, Libertarians used to be, there used to be two stripes of Libertarians, left-wing and right-wing, but now Libertarianism has kind of been taken over by the let business rule everything and don't worry crowd.
That's what, I would say this guy's one of those.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah. I also don't know why, as a matter of fact, I don't know why the Oregonians supported... didn't support Amanda Fritz. I mean, it seemed like she would be their kind of candidate, but they didn't. They supported the incumbent, Saltzman.
You know, I have a hard time figuring out the political philosophy of either of the two papers, to tell you the truth.
Well, three papers, because the Tribune is interesting, too. But, you know, all the papers here in town are basically, I think all three are basically conservative. Sometimes Willamette Week does some interesting work. Often the Tribune has better reporting and major scooping for local news. But the Oregonian stretches itself enormously to rationalize its basically conservative politics.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they would just like to pick the go with the winners, I guess.
Well, I guess. I mean, there is a left. There are two left-wing alternatives. There's the Stroots, right?
Yeah.
And then, which you can buy from a homeless or past homeless person anywhere, and then on the street. And then, of course, there's the Alliance, which you can subscribe to. So there are left-wing papers.
Sure. I guess the last thing I would say as regards Richard's call, I think what the deal is we're U.S. citizens who happen to reside in Oregon. I don't think
that's what I thought, too, you know, mm-hmm. And I got all, people get all, you know, they get all tripped out on language, and that's the land of lawyers.
Yeah.
To me, I never go there if I can avoid it.
Yeah, definitely. Not a pleasant place.
Go ahead. Thanks a lot. That's all I had.
Yeah, thanks for the call. All right, 231-8187.
Mention Karl Rove.
Karl Rove.
Right. Who's no longer helping formulate policy, such as it is.
Officially.
In the White House.
Officially.
Right. Which, I think their policy amounts pretty much to enrich our donors. That's the extent.
Well, that's their domestic policy.
That's their,
and destroy the environment. Enrich our donors, destroy the environment.
And it turns out that's the foreign policy as well. Except other people's environment. Right. So Rove's now entirely in charge of the campaign this fall.
Apparently.
He's helping to make sure Republicans retain their seats this fall. Because what are the Republicans more afraid of than everything right now? They're afraid of a democratically controlled Congress with subpoena power and the ability to investigate. And they're not just – to their credit, they're finally coming out and saying that. Ken Mellman, the RNC chairman, has been sending around email missives to his minions saying, you got to give us money because if you don't, the Democrats are going to investigate everything. And they're painting
scaring their people.
Yeah, they're painting it as a a kind of an act of petty partisan revenge. But the fact remains that it looks as if a great many crimes have been committed that need to be investigated. And naturally, the Democrats would do so if they came to control Congress. And it's not just Mellman is doing this, too. I read on one of my favorite blogs the other day an excerpt from one of Senator Dole's emails to her supporters. So she said,
Elizabeth Dole.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us money, or the Democrats are going to start investigating everybody. So if they're this scared at this point, and if they've got their hitman of hitmen, Karl Rove, in charge of the election at this point, there's no telling how far and wide this corruption may have actually gone.
Well, they already have fixed the elections for president in 2000 and 2004, and possibly local elections as well.
Yeah, but they're scared right now.
So they might do what, like a coup or something? No.
Well, no. They're just going to put
No.
This is maybe one of the dirtiest elections
ever.
In a period that we've seen more and more dirty
elections. They'll just throw enormous money at him.
Yeah, they will.
Because there's no voter-owned national elections.
Because they're scared that they will finally have to be accountable for their actions.
Well, and I think they also have the Jacobin lust for power, and they believe they're right. See, the other side of this, I mean, you talk about the corruption and the giving away of the store and all that, which I agree with you on. But I think the other side is very important, too. That is the true believer, Jesus, the hateful God, Christian trip.
Well, yeah, well, there's that trip. And that's probably the only place. There's that trip in the purely, I don't want to call them Nietzscheans, but the pure will to power crowd.
Well,
we are the strongest, therefore we should inherit the earth.
Well, that's the Rovian point of view.
But true believers in what I would like to call at this point traditional conservatism.
Yes.
I don't see how they could support this administration.
Well, they hold their nose and see the potential to do quote-unquote good things, like take away governmental powers so they can drown the whole thing in the bathtub.
Government's grown more under this administration than it ever has.
Well, that's a contradiction which they apparently can live with.
Fiscal conservatives can't support these guys. Spending's out of control.
Well, you're
right. The deficit has grown to gargantuan.
But that's what always happens when these guys get a chance.
I know. But see, that's one of the enduring myths of American politics.
Right. The Democrats are the big spenders, and the Republicans are the conservatives' money savers, and they never are.
Right.
And it's the opposite, generally.
But you're talking about the true believer faction. I think at this point, you can only call if you. Every poll has the president's approval ratings in the 30s.
Yeah.
So that 30% has got to be the Bible beaters that you just talked about.
Right.
And the America Uber Alles crowd.
Yeah.
That's all they have left.
Kind of Minutemen of the world.
Yeah.
United.
That's all they have left.
Well, but if in fact the Democrats ever come up with a politics that is persuasive, never have a program, then it's very likely that people who need to think about these issues will simply stay away from the polls.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, of course, there's another wild card, which is the Hispanic vote. Will Hispanics translate their marches in the street from last week into voter registration? And will that lead to their? Will that then lead to their recognition of what their class and cultural interests are? And will those interests they will decide be definitely not small business Republicanism, but support for the rights of Hispanics, of Latinos throughout the United States?
Agreed. My guess is that's going to translate into support for the Democrats at the polls. So it's very possible the Democrats may prevail here even without actually coming up with a plan.
Well, that's their strategy. Hide,
back into control.
Yeah,
of
let the bad policies of the Republicans become so manifest that even an idiot couldn't vote for
right. them. Right. But there's one thing that's looming in my mind, and you can call me crazy and call up and call me crazy if you want. And that's what if you throw another terrorist attack into this mix?
Well, that's really interesting because it could work against Bush or it could work for him.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I can see how it could go either way. My personal view is I think the American people would be fed up if there's a terrorist attack and they haven't done the things like securing the ports and all this, which they're now starting to talk about.
But they haven't done.
No. I mean, that would, from my point of view, it would be really clear. The one and clear and present danger was the attacks from these small number of international outlaws, the Al-Qaeda people,
mm-hmm.
which they didn't do a thing about. They let them escape and everything. I mean, they really screwed that up.
Yep.
Okay. And then they went to war with Iraq, which is a total distraction. So if they don't if the Al Qaeda or somebody pulls off some nastiness, I would think that would be it. But then again, other people would interpret this as, see, we need a strong kind of fascist leadership.
And that's what happened after September 11th.
Yeah.
And granted, that was such a blow to the national psyche that maybe you can write it off because of that. But essentially, what the president said was, I'm the only one who can protect you, even though I didn't protect you. And if there's another attack, he's going to say, I'm the only one who can protect you,
even though I didn't protect you. Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. That may not work this time.
That'd be interesting.
But I certainly hope it doesn't happen.
I don't know. Is there any percentage in betting on the intelligence of the American people?
I don't know.
You know, we are, and this is the crucial thing. It's not that we're not intelligent, but we are entertained virtually to death.
Yeah.
And we are totally distorted. If you look at the news, local or national, on just like regular networks, I mean, most people are now getting their news from the blogs, blogosphere, and a few cable stations, because the fact of the matter is that the local and national news is dumb, stupid, bad, unanalytical, and often factually incorrect.
This is true. They're starting to recover a bit.
A little. But they have no courage, though.
No.
The big scissors snipped everything, you know.
Right.
Okay, which is a male image, but I'm okay with
that. It is. 503-231-8187. Frank, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, thank you.
Good. I'm calling to follow up on the voter-owned elections party that you guys announced for me. I appreciate that.
Okay. Sure.
And that's an RSVP.
Oh, it's an RSVP.
It's my home. Yeah.
It's actually your home. Oh,
so what, how do we do that? How do we RSVP?
My phone number is 771-6601 in Portland.
Okay.
And you have the fax there, so if anybody calls in.
Well, we're going to leave that at the desk, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, just leave it at the desk, but that's my phone number, 503-771.
What are you going to do if like 1,000 people show up at your house, man?
Well, that's why it's an RSVP, Joe.
Ah.
Better get a keg, man.
Yeah, we got a keg. We also have, no, we're not going to have a keg, but we are going to have plenty of milk and cookies.
Milk and
we're
cookies.
Have, yes.
What is this, like that's Mount Holyoke College or something?
Yeah, it's a big draw here in the Northwest.
Yeah.
And Janice Thompson, who's Director of Money and Politics Research Action Project, will be the guest speaker.
Okay.
It's going to be short. It will be sweet. And, Joe, I have a suggestion.
Sure.
I've been on hold for about 40 minutes.
We can't help that.
I know that, but, I mean, it's like you guys talk a lot between calls. Why not just, like, have several people call in a row? You sort of then you can address those things. That way I can actually listen to the show.
You know, that isn't a bad idea. And I'm going
to. No, that isn't a bad idea.
We're going to take that under advisement.
That would be a great thing to take under advisement.
I think it's a good idea. Actually, it's a good idea.
I mean, it's really discouraging to not be able to listen to the show for 4 minutes because you may be called on in a minute.
Ah,
you know.
Fair enough.
So you're just standing there with something, you know.
Yeah, never mind.
Well, let's take calls from here on out.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, now
just gang them up and then address them.
And please keep your calls brief so we can make that work.
Line them up, knock them down.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Frank. Good luck with your party. Let's go to Terry.
Good morning, Terry.
No, good morning, Terry.
Well, Terry, are you there?
I don't know if Terry's there.
We're trying to take calls. Really, we are.
We are. We want to take calls.
Gordon. Good morning.
Good morning.
No, wait a minute, Gordon. You're a regular.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Good morning.
You're a regular, aren't you?
Kind of.
Oh, kind of. Don't give me that. All right.
So,
well, Make it short, Gordon.
Well, you guys talk so much, now I have to keep
blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we do. That's why they pay us the big bucks,
dude. Let's go into a little education real quick. Fascism. Totalitarianism, authoritarianism, dictatorship, reactionism, well, we're listening to that, nationalism, national socialism, red fascism, phallicism, whatever that is, Nazism.
Phalangism.
So I think we must go into these elections saying that we need to take the rights back from the corporations. We got to get them out of the election system.
I agree.
Hear, hear.
There's a thing called endcorporatepersonhood.org, I think is what it is. You can go to Google and...
Oh, yeah, right. This is the try to right the wrong that was sort of done by the Supreme Court in the 1880s.
Which is going to take a big battle, and it's going to take a lot of people and a lot of money.
Corporations are not people. They shouldn't have a First Amendment rights.
Well, it's a double dipping. You have the corporation, you have the shareholder votes, and then the corporation votes.
Yeah.
So now you have this double dipping, and you can't do the double dip.
We absolutely agree with you, man.
Whoa.
Whoa, lost him. All right.
Thanks, Gordon.
Thanks, Gordon, for the call.
And corporate personhood.
And we're going to take the next caller. It's Dennis.
Dennis, good morning.
No, Dennis. So here we have this plan. We're going to take all the calls that came, but they're not there. Coming.
All right, well, 231-8187.
Ah, BT.
Hey, BT, what's up, man?
Yeah, don't you dare call me a regular.
No, you haven't called in a while.
You're pretty irregular, BT.
Yeah.
But we don't want to get into your personal habits here.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you know, I'm hoping that Sten loses because I just don't understand how this progressive city likes this sleazebag. If you just look at
the sleazebag is implies that he's somehow doing something sleazy.
Yeah. Well, you guys consider it sleazy when you take money from fat cats.
Yes.
I don't necessarily do that, but, you know, just look at the...
but you're not a politician, BT.
Well, you know, look who gave Sten money in previous campaigns.
Ah.
And he's taken from the fat cats, the developers that get the subsidies.
That's true.
I don't know how he got this reputation as somebody who doesn't take that money.
Well, I don't think... I think what he got the reputation from was the effort to disengage the process from the fat cats.
Oh, give me a
break. Well, you don't think the...
Had to take the money. Is that what you're saying? He had to take the money earlier?
I'm not here to defend Sten.
Hey, I don't know what the problem... By the way, I don't know what the problem was. If you look at previous elections here in Multnomah.
You like
County.
Jenny Burdick better? I'm just curious.
No, Lister.
Lister?
Yeah.
Okay, Lister. Lister's the wild card in that contest.
Yeah, I don't want to close the loophole, Jenny Burdick. Are you kidding?
Gun control
wasn't even a city issue anyway. But I don't think that there was a real big problem. If you look at the previous city council races, there was no one close to being any kind of a conservative that had any money because the backers who did, you know, those people don't win. So, you know, you had these non-entities running, and they were always ridiculed in a paper, usually not even covered.
Okay.
So you just had the typical, you know, all these smart growth people. Those are your guys right up your alley, Joe.
I beg your pardon.
I'm telling you.
Anything else?
Bad news.
Anything else, man? So you like Dave Lister in this campaign for city council? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to vote for him. He'll definitely be different. I just wish he had a better resume, but then, you know, why should you have to have him?
I'm just reading from the pamphlet here. It said, wouldn't it be nice to have a city commissioner who knows how to manage an enterprise? The city is not an enterprise.
Yeah.
It's a city.
You know, I drove over to his campaign headquarters the other day, and I found out it was a post office box in one of those mail places.
And
I was really disappointed. You know,
but
nobody
still,
there. Really, there was really nobody there.
And then he wants common sense for City Hall, which I can't imagine.
Hey, but I just can't vote for the other two, you know.
Okay.
Not the mistakes that Sten made with he's attached to the tram. It's garbage.
Okay.
It's absolute garbage.
All right. Thank you for the input.
Hey, take it easy, Joe.
And call again soon.
Hey, look in your mailboxes next Tuesday morning, and you'll see a piece that I made myself for previous Sten campaigns.
Okay.
That I leave on Max trains and everything for people to see.
Oh, you troublesome
fellow. It'll be in your mailbox by next Tuesday morning.
But I actually have a point that I wanted to make here. Now, if you're opposed to Sten, you like Lister. Lister doesn't have a chance. When you oppose Sten, don't you end up with Burdick?
Pardon me?
Don't you end up with Burdick?
I'm a new caller, and
oh no, sorry, open. Sorry, totally confused here.
Okay, I'm Dennis.
Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Dennis. Welcome to the world.
Okay. Can I talk?
Yes.
Okay. I'm interested in responding to the comment I just heard about, is there any percentage in betting on the intelligence of American people?
Okay.
I'm a transplant from Nevada. I'm a Democrat and have been, at least, very active in Nevada politics, having been a delegate to the National Convention in 92 in New York.
Good for you.
I am here because after Kerry's run, which was a debacle, even in Nevada as well as Florida and the Northeast, I finally dropped out after about 20 years of pretty dedicated work and moved to Portland because of the fact that I think that is in the avant-garde for the mindset that is a little freer of these mundane campaign tactics.
Okay.
I have a question whether or not the thought about a person running for any office, whether Oregon or anywhere else, decided not to use a dead negative campaign in any manner, nor to even mention the opponent's name, give him any heat, give him any credence, give him nothing, but take the campaign issues.
Mm-hmm.
And with respect for the listeners, take those issues and then just unravel them in the real meaning.
That would be nice.
As if they weren't aware. And then you, instead of using the position as a as an opponent to someone, if you put yourself on their political level, you're losing already. What you need to do, in my estimation, humbly, mm-hmm. is to educate the voters even beyond the status quo of the issues and bring them into the light for what is not being said, and not to even mention his own name.
Well, I think probably both of us agree with you. The problem is that we have free speech. Oh, actually,
I disagree, but we'll get to that in a second.
To that. But the problem is we have free speech. There's no way to enforce what you want.
No, I understand that. I am saying you select, if you're running for office and you are making a selection on how to present your information to the voters, whether mm-hmm. it's on TV or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you do not give any weight at all to the opponent. You only discuss the issues. You don't even discuss, you know, I want this, I can do this, I am the best representative for. You educate them on the issues freely.
That would be good.
As if there were no opponents. And then let it be known that you are approachable if you want to discuss it further as far as you
That would be good. No, we're trying to get a lot of callers in. So,
yes, we are.
But he made a good point. I mean, it would be nice if the elective process actually was educational rather than smeary.
And nasty?
Nasty.
Yeah, I think that can work to an extent. I think you can win a winning campaign without smearing the other guy. However, you absolutely have to respond to smears against yourself. And here's why. I have an object lesson in point here, and that was John Kerry's campaign. Remember when he was swift-boated? By that swift boat veterans for truth, they call themselves.
Yeah, right.
Where they called into question the nature of Kerry's military service in Vietnam. They started saying, maybe he didn't deserve the first of his three Purple Hearts.
Right.
And then they generated a flap about him throwing his medals over the White House fence when he protested the war after he got out. And then there was a flap about, well, was it the ribbons on his medals or the medals themselves or blah, 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 blah. And Kerry, by and large, did not respond adequately to that, and the meta message that was sent there was, Kerry's opponents can go up and slap him around, and he's not going to do anything about it.
So he's a wuss.
And that absolutely, yes, that absolutely contributed to his defeat. That and, you know, cheating in Ohio. But you have to respond to that stuff. What if Kerry had said, oh, someone standing up and questioning my service in Vietnam? Did you know I got wounded three times? I got three Purple Hearts. And now you want to question whether or not the first one of them was legit? Now you're going to call into question whether or not I had the right to throw my own medals over the fence? Well, if my opponent wants to have a legitimate discussion about service records in Vietnam, then I suggest we lay our service records down side by side, and maybe the president could start addressing some of the gaps he's been unwilling to explain.
Thank you, John Kerry.
That's what he should have done. He would have won going away.
He would have. He would have. You want to make those announcements. So this is KBOO, 90.7 FM dial. It's me, Joe Uris, with Abe Proctor, and we talk too much.
Yes, we do. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Between the Covers, Jack interviews transgender activist, playwright, and performance artist Kate Bornstein, author of Gender Outlaw, on Men, Women, and the Rest of Us. At 9:30, Per Fogring speaks with Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz about With Blood on the Border, a memoir of the Contra War, the third volume in her award-winning series. Negroponte might come up in that discussion.
Yeah, you just
yes.
might.
At 10, the guest is Ruth Curry of the Older Women's League talking about their upcoming Mother's Day report called Women in Long-Term Care, Where Will I Live and Who Will Take Care of Me? At 10:30 on stage and studio, the topics are Thicker Than Water, a festival of plays opening this Thursday, and for Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, a feature on the story of frontier herbalist Doc Hay.
A very cool guy.
Frontier herbalist.
Frontier herbalist, yes. Yeah, up there in John Day.
On the frontier.
John Day, a beautiful site to visit, by the way, the store he and his partner ran.
And at 11 on Democracy Now!, topics include Chicago's Abu Ghraib, the UN investigates Chicago jails, and a report from Baghdad on the recent round of political killings there. Let's go back to the phones.
Well, yeah, we're going to go back to the phones. Would you, Mary, hang on just a minute. I want to remind people the Paper Politics exhibit is opening on Thursday night at 7 at Portland State in the Food for Thought Cafe, and that Josh McPhee, the great stencil artist, is going to be with us next week. Okay, Mary, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Joe and Abe. I've been listening to the comments on the county commissioner race and wanted to say a couple quick things about it.
Absolutely.
We have four fine and capable candidates, so we're really lucky.
Yes.
But I actually work at the county and have been watching this race very carefully.
Ah.
And everyone talks glowingly about the services that the county provides.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them, except for one, actually has a plan about how to fund it.
Okay.
How are they going to fund it?
That's a good point.
And Xander Patterson has a plan. And what I like about his plan is that it's kind of along the lines of don't think of an elephant, you know, reframing the argument and saying the feds have taken funds away. We're not going to get anything from the feds.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do locally? The rich have had tax cuts of over 4%. Let's put in a tax less than what the tax cuts were. So
mm-hmm.
even the rich aren't going to be paying what they were paying even a few years ago. Anyone earning over $45,000 pays a tax. Under that, and it's a graduate, it's progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Under that, nothing. Under $45,000, no tax. That way we can fund our services.
Mm.
And when he goes around and talks to people who traditionally are called anti-tax,
mm-hmm.
they are in favor of it.
Really? That's interesting.
They recognize that we can't afford to have mentally ill people without services, children, early childhood education, not getting the services when they're young, just going to cost more in the long run. So I hope that people take a look at his website, which is votexander.org, and Xander is spelled with an X. So I think it's really thinking outside the box. It is a plan, and I think we on the left need to start asking for what we want and what we need.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Excellent.
All right, 231-8187.org.
All right.
231-8187?
Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning. I was just calling because I just wanted to make a comment about a caller who called in about three or four calls ago.
Okay.
And I was just thinking that I really loathe to hear, especially on a progressive radio station, comments like, you'd not... voting for someone who is not necessarily going to win, doesn't that mean you're going to get the person who you don't really want to win?
Ah, that's a good criticism. No, that's a good criticism. It was me who made that comment, actually.
So I
appreciate that.
Yeah, and I really love to hear something like that, especially on a program like this, because I think that there's definitely a lot to say for someone who's willing to make a stand for the things that they're going to believe in, and just the fact that they're casting their vote for that person is going to mean that in the future people are going to recognize that person's getting that vote and their views are definitely taken into consideration.
No, I think that's a very good criticism, and I think actually the way you make change is to vote for what you want, not for what you don't want.
Exactly.
So I think you make a good point. I stand corrected.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Jeremy.
All right.
Who's next?
Who's next? Hello. Terry. Hi, Terry.
Terry.
Hi, Joe.
Hey.
Hey, I don't know if this is recorded or not, but I really want to hear a recap of the initial discussion about what's going on with all the intelligence stuff, just so I can make sense of it. Is that going to be on your, like, on a website or anything where it could be accessed?
I don't believe so. I don't think we have a web archive.
You know, I'm not sure how it works. We have streaming radio, but I don't know if it's an archive.
Yeah, but I haven't seen that explanation of what's taking place anywhere else, and it was, you know.
We only have 3 minutes left, and I don't think Abe can do that in 3 minutes.
But I think this is something we'll probably come back to in the future.
Yeah, you know, in fact, we'll make a commitment is this all right for next week to just quickly run through it?
Yeah, recap that? Sure.
Run through it really fast next week. How's that?
Okay, or if you could write it down somewhere, it'd be great.
Abe would write it down, and you could come here and get it.
Maybe we need to start keeping a blog.
Do a one-page essay about it.
A blog.
That's true.
You know, I have a blog that I never use.
Well, maybe you and I should have a blog for this show.
Yeah, let's have a blog.
That's an excellent idea.
Blog.
That is a very excellent
That's a very good idea.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Terry. All right, one more. Quickie.
Hi.
Jay.
Good morning.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay, good. I'm going to take up 2 seconds.
All right, do it.
The American Prospect magazine ran a series of articles on Oregon's radical voting process. And it's very, very interesting reading, right? And if you guys can pick up a copy of the American Prospect, the progressive magazine for the intellectual, it's very, very informative, and it's really worth reading. Have a good day.
Thanks very much.
That was a short and sweet call.
Okay, from now on, let's do this format where we take a whole lump of calls. We talk a lump of calls. We talk a lump of calls, kind of like that.
Sounds good.
That way people don't get stuck in that kind of bad situation.
In the queue, as
in
it were.
In the queue, as it were. But we don't have enough lines is another problem.
No, we don't.
All right. So we talked a little bit about local elections. Mm-hmm. You talked about the ultimate corruption of the system and the creation of the centralized power of the military in the CIA through Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
I talked about the importance of the Paper Politics exhibit at Food for Thought Cafe at Portland State, which opens this Thursday at 7 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be there for through June,
yep.
through the beginning
and,
of June.
And we talked about the voter-owned election party that you need to RSVP for.
Yeah, if you want to go to
503-771-6601 is the number to call.
Yeah, and neither of us advocated for any candidates.
Nope.
So we did everything we were supposed to.
Yeah, we're done.
That's cool.
All right.
Now we want people to stay tuned because this is Cable and it's listener supported radio and it's at 90.7 on your FM and it's really great and wonderful stuff coming up.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Para que vuele bien alto, para que vuele bien lejos, lejos de ti y de tu amor. Aunque tenga que sufrir, no me voy a arrepentir, pero voy a maldecir el haberte conocido. Ya mañana Dios dirá, pero hoy tengo que cambiar para ser feliz contigo.
This program is made possible in part by KBU Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com.
This is KBOO Portland. Welcome to the Tuesday Morning Radio Zine. First on Between the Covers, Jack interviews transgender activist, playwright, and performance artist Kate Bornstein, author of Gender Outlaw on Men, Women, and the Rest of Us. At 9:30, Per Fogering speaks with Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz about With Blood on the Border, a memoir of the Contra War, the third volume in her award-winning series. At 10, the guest is Ruth Curry of the Older Women's League, talking about their upcoming Mother's Day report called Women and Long-Term Care, Where Will I Live and Who Will Take Care of Me? At 10:30 on stage and studio, the topics are the Thicker Than Water Festival, a festival of plays. Excuse me, it's called Thicker Than Water. It's a festival of plays, opening this Thursday. And for Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, a feature on the story of frontier herbalist Doc Hay. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, topics include Chicago's Abu Ghraib, the UN investigates Chicago jails, and a report from Baghdad on the recent round of political killings there. And remember, tomorrow morning at 7:30, it's a candidates forum for Portland City Council, position number 3, the Saltzman seat. Now here's Between the Covers.